Okay, I'm going to talk about the black hole horizon. I'm Andy Strominger, and it's Strings 98. So here's the outline. I'm going to make some general comments about problems with quantum black holes and what Maldacena's conjecture has told us. And then I'll talk about some recent work on ADS-3 and black hole entropy. In the unlikely event I'm not out of time, I'll talk about some work in progress on ADS-2, and then I'll have some concluding comments. And I'm going to give some emphasis to, rather than things that I've published, things that I've tried to understand but have failed, in the hope that one of you will explain it to me. Now, the quest to understand quantum properties of black holes has been going on for a quarter of a century now. And on the way, we've really learned an amazing amount. It's incredible how much we could learn without actually understanding the problem. And despite all this progress, we still, in my opinion, do not have an answer to the fundamental question, what is a quantum black hole? In fact, basically the first thing that was said about it, we still don't understand. And that is why the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy for any black hole always comes out to be the area, this very simple universal law. So, well, in recent years, we have computed the entropy from first principles in string theory. It's maybe been done in several dozen cases, each one of them requiring dozens of pages of computation. Yet, in the end, we always, Hawking always gets to say, I told you so, because it always works out to be exactly a quarter of the area. Now, string theory has shed some light on this, but again, we don't have a completely satisfactory explanation. Now, one place where this universal nature of the black hole horizon showed up was in the study of supersymmetric black holes, which are the main thing that we understand a little bit of. And some time ago, starting with Gibbons and Townsend, it was found, this interesting structure was found, where if you start out at infinity at any point in the moduli space, and then you watch how the moduli, by which I mean all the directions transverse to the radius, the two-sphere or the n-sphere that characterizes the horizon and the moduli of some internal space, they move along some path, and then at the end, they hit a fixed point, and what the point that you end up at is independent of where you started. And in a sense, one could say, and this is another picture of the same thing, where I've drawn going from r equals infinity to r equals zero, and here's the shape of the geometry changing and reaching a fixed point as you get to the horizon. And the equations that govern this are very much like renormalization group type equations. And in some sense, the area law predicts this, because at the end of the day, the area law, together with the assertion that there should be some microscopic calculation of the entropy, predicts this, because we need the area to depend only on parameters of the black hole, like its charge and so on, if we're going to give a derivation of it just in terms of quantum properties of the black hole itself, as opposed to quantum properties of associated with the values of the moduli that one approaches in the asymptotic region. And I think we'll hear more about this attractor from Greg Moore. Now, in a seemingly completely unrelated development in the early 90s, people tried to study, if you can remember the string world sheet, there's a sigma model, and people tried to construct black holes not as in terms of field theories on some brain, but they tried to describe the string sigma model that conformally invariant string sigma model that describes the black hole geometry. And many people worked on this. And again, there was a similar picture. And what happens is at the horizon, there's some conformally invariant WZW model. And away from the horizon, it has the wrong value of the radius to be conformally invariant. But you fix that up to give an overall C equals 10 conformal field theory by dressing the action governing the WZW model or whatever with just the right power of the Liouville field to make the whole thing conformally invariant. And again, there's a picture like this where the sigma model varies as you move in from R equals infinity to R equals zero, again, where you hit an infrared fixed point. And the dictionary is that radial transformations are world sheet renormalization group flows, and that the near horizon geometry was the fixed point of the conformal field theory on the string world sheet. Now, in yet another seemingly unrelated development, quantum states of black holes were represented by field theories coming from D-brains. So one equated a black hole with some quantum field theory, some gauge theory on a D-brain. And it was found in that the low energy dynamics of the black hole had a universal description, which involved the conformal limit, the infrared limit, of the field theory that lived on the D-brain. So all of these suspiciously similar behaviors were identified as the same thing in Maldacena's dictionary, that string theory on the near horizon ADS geometry is the same thing as the field, the infrared conformal fixed point of the gauge field theory living on the brain, which describes the microstates of the black hole. And at the same time, the radial coordinate in the black hole geometry is identified with the energy scale in the field theory on the brain. And to the extent that fundamental strings can be understood as solitons or collective excitations in the this field theory, that equates those energy scales with energy scales on the string world sheet, and one therefore understands why the black hole solutions were related to world sheet renormalization group flows. Now, the successful D-brain computations of black hole entropy, by the very nature of the dual picture that they employ, so the successful descriptions work in this picture, the successful counting of the entropy work in this D-brain gauge theory over here. And by the very nature of that dual description, in which the black hole has become a small object, smaller than the string scale, they don't give us a picture of space-time information flow. So they don't. It's very hard to address the question, what happens to somebody who jumps through the black hole horizon? And at the same time, there isn't really a horizon in that picture, and so it's hard to understand the universality of the area law. So I think that Maldacena's duality certainly leads to the hope that one may get a more direct understanding of these issues, because it tells us, it relates things in a more precise way between the picture in which the counting has been done and the picture that's closer to the standard description of a black hole. So, a concrete question that we might address is, can we concretely enumerate the states responsible for the black hole entropy as some kind of states, not in a field theory on the brain, but as some kind of states, excitations of ADS. And it's a surprisingly difficult problem. The answer is I don't think it's been done, but it's something we might hope to do. So I'm going to talk in a moment in some more detail about the example of ADS-3, but let me first make a parenthetical comment. So if we really did have a universal explanation of the area law, and my criterion for that is that we have some description of a Hilbert space, and we can count the asymptotic growth of states, and we can get the one-quarter, and that it applies to all kinds of black holes, not just supersymmetric ones, because after all, the area law covers everything. So it would have to, this hypothetical universal explanation would certainly have to include, for example, Schwarzschild black holes, as well as the supersymmetric ones that we have been studying recently. Now, if we take a supersymmetric black hole and we go to the near horizon geometry, we get anti-de Sitter space, which is, of course, a space with negative cosmological constant. And what we've learned recently is that the Hilbert space of this theory can be described as the Hilbert space of some conformal field theory, and exactly which conformal field theory depends on the black hole in question. Now, what about Schwarzschild? Well, again, since the entropy depends only on the area of the black hole, one might expect that one could understand this problem by zooming in near the horizon of the black hole. And if you zoom into the horizon of a Schwarzschild black hole, you don't get anti-de Sitter space, but you get Rindler space. And Rindler space is in different coordinates, lambda equals zero Minkowski space. And we, of course, don't know what that's dual to. But what this suggests is that getting the universal explanation for the area law is the same as the problem that Witten was raising in his first lecture, of getting an explanation or a characterization of non-perturbative string theory in Minkowski space, because after all, the near horizon geometry of a Schwarzschild black hole is Minkowski space. Now, while this doesn't tell us how to solve this problem, but I think it's gratifying to see that, that these important problems are related. Okay, now I'm going to become more specialized, and I want to talk about the special case of ADS-3, which is dual to 1 plus 1 conformal field theory. And this duality was discovered in a more general setting by Brown and Hanau in 86, and they considered basically three-dimensional gravity with a negative cosmological constant coupled to anything, any kind of matter. and that could include string modes or Kaluza-Klein modes, so it could be an ADS3 that was compactified down from 10 dimensions. The only thing that their analysis really depended on was that the theory had diffeomorphism invariance and was asymptotically anti-de Sitter. Now, in analyzing a theory of gravity, one does some on a space with some prescribed asymptotic behavior. One starts by fixing the gauge, and then you find that there's still some generally there's still some asymptotic symmetry group left over. In 3 plus 1 asymptotically flat space times, that asymptotic symmetry group is just the Poincaré group, and so states in asymptotically flat 3 plus 1 dimensional gravity have to form representations of the Poincaré group. Now, if you carefully go through the same detailed analysis of the appropriate asymptotic boundary conditions for asymptotically 2 plus 1 anti-de Sitter space, you find that the asymptotic symmetry group is much bigger. The asymptotic symmetry group is basically the group of conformal transformations. It's an infinite dimensional rather than a finite dimensional group, and it's the group of conformal transformations acting on the cylinder which forms the boundary of anti-de Sitter space. And so since the asymptotic symmetry group is the 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal group, the Hilbert space of this theory has to provide a representation of that group, and therefore, by definition, the theory is a conformal field theory. And this is an example, since we started out with a theory which was in 2 plus 1 dimensions, but we learned just from analyzing the asymptotic symmetries that it has some kind of description as a 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory on the boundary. This is an example of the holographic principle of a Tuft and Suskind. Now, they did more than that. They had some explicit representations of the generators of these symmetries, which after imposing the constraints just reduced to surface terms as usual, and therefore only depended on the asymptotic gravitational field and not the matter that one adds to the theory. And they just computed classical Poisson brackets and compared the Poisson bracket of two generators with the generator of the Lie bracket of the two infinitesimal diffeomorphisms, found that they aren't equal, and furthermore found that the missing piece can be identified as the central charge of the theory, and they gave, so that leads to a number for the central charge, and in the units that I'm using, in which Newton's constant is an eighth, that number is 12 times L, which I remind you is 1 over the square root of minus the cosmological constant. And this analysis, of course, makes sense when the scale of the anti-de Sitter space is a much lower energy scale than the Planck length, which means that this 12L must be much greater than 1. So we're talking about a theory with a large central charge. Now, 2 plus 1 gravity with negative cosmological constant has black hole solutions. These solutions were discovered by Bagnados, Teitelboim, and Zanelli. And there, I won't write the form of the solutions, but what I would like to write is the formula for the entropy as given by the area law. And it can be written in this form in terms of the mass m of the black hole and its angular momentum, J, and the mass, and remember, we define the L's should be the L's are the things which generate the conformal group on the cylinder at infinity, and these two combinations of the L's generate time translations and spatial rotations, so we can identify them explicitly with the mass and the angular momentum. So we have a conformal field theory. We know its central charge. And then, assuming it's a unitary conformal field theory, we can simply apply Cardy's formula to get the asymptotic, the growth of the asymptotic density of states. And using those various formula that I gave on the previous transparency, we just plug into there what M and J are, and it reduces precisely, including the numerical coefficient, to the formula for the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy as given by computing a quarter of the area of the associated black hole solution. So this gives a statistical derivation of the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy for any consistent unitary quantum theory of gravity in 2 plus 1 dimensions with a negative cosmological constant, but it's rather general, and it doesn't give us a picture of, doesn't tell us what the conformal field theory actually is, and it doesn't give us a picture of what the states are that are responsible for the entropy. So we'd like to consider some explicit examples. So two examples that we might think of are string theory, reduced down to ADS3, which, as Hyun showed, is the near horizon geometry of the D1, D5 black hole. And another seemingly simpler example, seems like it should be a simpler example, is just pure 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity with no matter at all. And in fact, since pure 2 plus 1 gravity is a subsector of the full string theory, it seems that once we understand this, it should be rather trivial to understand this. But in fact, that's not true at all. The first example seems much more confusing than the second. And so let me discuss that one first. So first, let me remind you of an old result of Witten's that, and Achukro and Townsend, that 2 plus 1 gravity can be written as a Chern-Simon theory, where we make left and right SL2R gauge fields by adding plus or minus the Verbein to the spin connection, and then we write a Chern-Simon action at a level k, which is twice this L here. And if you plug this all in and work out the equations of motion and so on, you find there's a constraint which enables you to eliminate the spin connection in terms of the Verbein, and you end up back with 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity. And so it's a Chern-Simon theory for SL2R across SL2R at opposite levels. Now, Chern-Simon theories have only boundary dynamics, at least on a topologically trivial space. We want to consider it on the disk here, because the spatial sections of anti-de Sitter of ADS3 are just a disk. And so as you go to the boundary of this disk, it was, as was learned, you get, first of all, an SL2R WZW model that propagates on the boundary. But that's not quite the end of the story, because we have to be careful about imposing the constraints with the asymptotic fall off of the fields and so on. And the boundary conditions that are appropriate in this context are not exactly the same thing as the boundary conditions that were studied in the context of Chern-Simon gauge theory. There's some extra constraints, and it's been argued that this reduces the theory to a 1 plus 1 dimensional Liouville theory with central charge equal to 12L as predicted by the general analysis of Brown and Hanau. And this Liouville field is, roughly speaking, the metric on the boundary. That was worked out by Bagnados and Cussart, Hanau, and Van Driel, and there's been a lot of, more papers on this recently. The answers that we're getting, as you'll see, don't all fit together, and so one has to question whether the boundary conditions that have been applied here are the appropriate boundary condition for the physical situation at hand. Now, well, this looks nice. We got the right central charge, but there are problems with this. The first is that it's not clear what the Hilbert space is. There's a long literature on SL2R and the Liouville theory, and there are different kinds of states, and it's not clear which we should be including or not in this context. Secondly, we can't apply Cardy's formula because the theory, at least in the usual way that one would describe it, is not a unitary theory, and so we can't employ that general explanation of the black hole entropy. And finally, it's not really clear that the theory even has black holes, in the sense that if we define the theory as the Chern-Simon gauge theory on the disk, the holonomies, we integrate over flat connections, the holonomies will be trivial, and the black holes are associated with non-trivial holonomies. So, perhaps there is some pure gravity theory, which is a little more complicated than this pure SL2R theory, in which amplitudes are given by not just integrating over connections on here, but also summing over topologies, summing over all possible topologies, as one might suppose is necessary in a quantum theory of gravity. And if you do that, you're going to get something substantially more complicated than the simple conformal field theory that was discussed by Bagnados and Cussart, Hanau, and Van Driel. But if there is a sensible theory of this type, it should, first of all, and if it does include dynamical black holes, I think it is obligated to explain the black hole entropy. And if we have a unitary construction of this type, it should be described by some kind of C equals 12L conformal field theory on the boundary. And one speculation, which probably not right, but an interesting thing to think about, is that the conformal field theory in question is the rank level dual of SL2R level K, namely SLKR level 2, which does have the right asymptotic growth for some cases. In any case, I think this is an interesting problem. One logical outcome is, if one can make sense of this theory, as I said, it's obligated to explain the black hole entropy. One logical outcome is that there simply are no consistent quantum theories of gravity other than string theory, and so that we don't have any other examples. So, well, let me go on now to string theory. So string theory provides another example of this general argument. If we start out with Q1 D1 brains and Q5 D5 brains, we take Moldacena's limit, go to the near horizon geometry. On the other side, we start with the Higgs branch of the gauge theory, and we get this 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory, which lives on a deformation of the symmetric product of Q1, Q5, K3s. And there are two ways now to compute the central charge of the conformal field theory. One is by computing the dimension of this Higgs branch. But an alternate way is to just look at quantum gravity on this space here, which one derives just from the classical solution, and then employ the Brown-Hinault result. And after you carefully work through and normalize everything, you find that the 12L is indeed equal to 6Q1Q5. So this provides an alternate way that, in principle, one might have computed the central charge of this conformal field theory. Now, as has been discussed before at this conference, ADS3 should be thought of as the Neuwirth-Schwarz vacuum. The states of ADS3 should correspond to the states of the Neuwirth-Schwarz vacuum of the conformal field theory. One way of seeing this is that the spinners are anti-periodic, because as you go around the circle at infinity where the conformal field theory lives, that's a 2-pi rotation, they get a minus sign. And a nice check on this, which was made by Cousard and Hinault, is that if you, again, go through your normalizations, you find that L naught for ADS3 is minus C over 24. So excitations of ADS3 should be the same things as excitations of the Neuwirth-Schwarz conformal field theory, which is the same thing as operators in the plane on the conformal field theory. Now, one might also try to understand the Ramon-Ramon sector, but that's complicated on both sides. The Ramon-Ramon sector over here corresponds to the M equals zero black hole, and that's some quotient of ADS3, and the quotient has a fixed point, and you can have arbitrarily short strings which wind around that fixed point, and so we don't really know, it's a kind of orbifold singularity that we don't really understand how to deal with. And on this side, of course, we have to worry in the Ramon-Ramon sector about operators that create branch cuts and so on. So we can just stick to the Neuwirth-Schwarz sector and try to understand everything through spectral flow. So the first thing that was done was to equate the chiral primaries of the conformal field theory with the BPS particle states in ADS3. And rather than going through the whole story, let me just give one example. So take some your favorite harmonic form on K3, fill up the indices with fermions, and then symmetrize, and we get some operator in this conformal field theory, which is the chiral primary. That is, it has L naught bar equal to a half, and that's equal to the spins J and J bar. Now, more generally, we can get the complete set of chiral primaries from knowledge of the cohomology of this symmetric product space. Now, on the other side, on the ADS side, what do we do? Well, we've compactified down to three dimensions, and we have some scalar field phi. And we understand how L naught acts on that scalar field phi because it's related to an isometry of anti-de Sitter space. So we look for some mode of the scalar field phi which obeys L naught bar equal to half and has the right spin and furthermore is annihilated by L1. And then using the fact that the Laplacian on ADS3 is related to the squares of these things, we can compute the mass of the scalar field and we find that the existence of this operator over here corresponds to dimension half a half operator over here corresponds to the existence of a scalar field whose mass squared is minus 1/4 square root of Q1, Q5. And on this side, we work out the whole story by doing the Kaluza-Klein supergravity reduction and computing all the states of this type. And this was done for the left-right chiral primaries in a very nice recent paper by De Boer. It was extended to things which were just right chiral primaries, at least at low levels. Now, the match, it's a very intricate story, and certainly one that inspires confidence in this duality. And the match, however, is not quite perfect. There's a few things missing. And what's missing is the following. So if we have some operator O, which corresponds to a single boson in a particular mode of the field phi, we square that operator, we get a new chiral primary, and that chiral primary corresponds to two particles in the same mode. And since if we take enough powers of any chiral primary, we get zero, we learn there's an exclusion principle which limits the number of particle, the occupation number of these particular BPS modes. And this is a non-perturbative phenomena because the number of particles is going like 1 over G string squared. So it's certainly something which cannot be seen either in supergravity perturbation theory or in string perturbation theory. And similar phenomena, this isn't a new thing, similar phenomena have been observed. Well, one of the nicest examples is the two-dimensional QCD string, where the string can, is a flux tube, it can wind around, but if it's a flux tube or an SUN gauge theory, n times winding around a circle is trivial, so there's no such state, and that cannot be seen in the perturbative description of 2D QCD as a string theory. Wait, I still have 5 minutes? Oh, great. I thought I was over. Okay. So where's the entropy? Well, under spectral flow, from the Ramon-Ramon sector to the Noether-Schwarz sector, the states responsible for the black hole entropy, which is given by this expression, become right chiral primary fields where they have some left-moving L-naught, which deviates from the left primary value by N. Now, in general, if we want to make N very big in order to get into the semi-classical black hole regime, supergravity can't be trusted. I mean, we just saw from this exclusion principle that supergravity is way off for these chiral primary states when N is of order Q1, Q5. So there's no guarantee that we can understand these states as some kind of building them up out of excitations on ADS3, because we may run into a strong coupling problem, and we could be that the only description of these is just as a black hole in ADS3. However, the gods have been smiling on us a lot lately, so let's just forge ahead. So here is a conjectural description of what might what these states might be. So if we, the most number of chiral primaries we can have in a given state is exactly Q1, Q5. So if we take an L naught bar equals a half state for each one of these OIs, the exclusion principle limits us to Q1, Q5 particles in a state. Now we can consider a general level N right chiral primary state, which we get by taking Virasoro descendants in all possible ways, so that the total level number adds up to N of each one of these OIs here, and that gives us some collection of states. And if you count how many of these states there are, the number is exactly equal to the black hole entropy. Now, well, this is just something I'm throwing out. There are a lot of problems with this description. In general, at high level, I don't have a very good idea of which states are independent and which ones are related to each other. So I don't really know why these should be the right set of states rather than some other, and I don't know that these are all independent. Furthermore, if I take one of these chiral primaries and I act on it with L minus 1, I know what that does. It basically takes the mode of the scalar field and translates it to another point in anti-de-Sitter space. So if I had only L minus 1s in here, then the physical picture of this would be particles at all, Q1, Q5 particles at all possible positions in anti-de-Sitter space. But of course, if I restrict myself to L minus 1, I won't get enough states to comprise the entropy. I have to use the L minus n's. And what it means to act with L minus n on one of these chiral primaries is a much more mysterious issue. And I don't know whether it makes sense what it means from the point of view of supergravity to act with the L minus n's independently on all these operators. Of course, the L minus n's are diffeomorphisms of some kind of anti-de-Sitter space. They're not isometries, but they're diffeomorphisms. So we could certainly try to understand this. So let me conclude with a challenge, which I think exemplifies, or at least my confusion. And the challenge is to find what's wrong with this picture. So if you go to very near to the horizon of a black hole, you get anti-de-Sitter space. Now, anti-de-Sitter space doesn't have any singularities, and it doesn't have a horizon. But still, if you the black hole horizon, it sits in the anti-de-Sitter space like that, and the singularity that was initially there in the black hole got pushed off in this direction, while the asymptotically flat region got pushed off in this direction. Nevertheless, when we embed a black hole geometry into anti-de-Sitter space, this is the picture. The orange lines here are time as we think of it in the asymptotically flat region, which we've neglected out here, and they're the standard Schwarzschild time out of the black hole. On the other hand, when we forget about that and say that anti-de-Sitter space is dual to a brain, some kind of conformal field theory, the time of that conformal field theory is just the time which marches straight up and down anti-de-Sitter space like this. And of course, it's obvious that evolution in this direction with appropriate boundary conditions on anti-de-Sitter space is going to be unitary. So rather than solving the issue of black hole unitarity, it seems to me it's gotten much worse. Because now we feel we understand the near horizon region. It's there. The anti-de-Sitter isometries, as Horowitz and I think Meroff discussed, mix up the region outside the horizon with the region inside the horizon, and we can't just wish it away. And so from this point of view, it should seem very odd that there's some kind of unitary evolution in this direction which forgets about the rest of anti-de-Sitter space, and it also is hard to understand why information can't leave the region outside the black hole and go into these other portions of anti-de-Sitter space where we'll never get them back again. So I think I'm probably over.
Just a quick correction. That was Hiroshi Aguri on the paper about the symmetries.
Sorry.
questions? Yes, Paul?
That's the covering space of ADS, yes. CADS, as I learned this morning. Yeah, okay, so that's one thing you might try to do. So ADS, well, let's see. We would get ADS itself by identifying this dotted line here, which I haven't drawn with this here. And, well, one number of people have tried to make sense of that. And then you have closed time-like curves. And again, it doesn't, well, maybe that's how it works out, but I haven't been able to make sense of it. You might want to say that the information goes up here and comes back out like that. Yeah.
Further questions? Greg? So the question is, have you looked at the CAPS determinant for these states?
No, I haven't.
Down here.
How important is a level rank duality in your speculation? Because I'm not sure there is a level rank duality for a non-compact version SL2R level K. It's only been shown for a compact version.
Question is, how important is the level rank duality?
Well, that's one of many ways the speculation could be wrong, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
In the back. Yeah, Miriam.
Well, I think it had to come out right, otherwise the theory would have been inconsistent. But just because you can give some indirect argument for what the asymptotic growth of states has to be, doesn't mean that you can give a concrete description of the Hilbert space. And so I'm not sure that there, I don't know of an argument that there has to be another concrete description of the Hilbert space other than the one that we know of, which lives in the conformal field theory on the black hole. And if there isn't, I still feel we really have not understood the essence of what a black hole is, because this alternate description in terms of the conformal field theory on the brain doesn't clarify this for us. It just says we're just going to forget about these orange lines and just stick with the green ones.
On the side here.
This picture also suggests possibly that there could be a problem with the Euclidean postulate in these conformal field theories. Because wouldn't it be true that if one takes the Euclidean conformal field theory, that would get to the Euclidean section, Euclidean continuation of the red region of the diagram?
That's right. I mean, there certainly is a problem with the Euclidean, because often when you take the Euclidean continuation, you'll get something that computes density matrices rather than thermal correlation functions rather than.
But this would be the Euclidean postulate just for the boundary conformal field theory, if you like,
Well, you have to tell me whether you're talking about, I mean, even on the boundary, the orange time and the green time are different. And so there will be different Euclidean continuations of the boundary conformal theory.
Any further questions? Oh, sorry. Yeah.
If you think about the conformal field theory, you can imagine processes in which a black hole does not form and evaporate in the interior. And will you be describing conformal field theory with some amplitude? What kind of signal do you think there would be in a conformal field theory amplitude that would say that a black hole was formed and evaporated in the interior? And what's the difference in as far as the conformal field theory is concerned between a garden variety process and a process in which a black hole forms and evaporates in the interior?
Well, I don't know if I can say anything useful about that. The only way I know how to think about what a black hole is in that conformal field theory is to look at some states of very high level number and do the map to the dual description. Yeah, I don't know what would be special, if there is something special about a black hole in that context. Just in terms of purely conformal field theory characterization. Yeah.
Okay, I think we have one last question. Lee.
Unless I'm confused, shouldn't we only expect unitarity from the outside point of view when we don't have an external black hole and the black hole sort of evaporated out away?
No. I think we should always expect it. Because if we believe that the black hole has is described by a quantum object with some possibly very large but finite number of microstates, then if we consider scattering processes involving that black hole, which, of course, there will be information loss for a while because if we don't keep track of the quantum state of the black hole, but the amount of entropy that you can produce in the outside world will be bounded by the logarithm of the number of microstates of the black hole. So eventually you'll stop losing information. If you scatter off the thing enough, you can determine what its microstate is. And that's not what seems to happen in this picture, which is basically Hawking's picture.
Okay, let's thank our speaker again.